Welcome to the Uncomfortable Truth podcast, hosted by the rock star of consulting, Alan Weiss. Be prepared to have your beliefs challenged and your behaviors questioned.
Welcome back to the Uncomfortable Truth. My guest today is Al McCree, who I've known, I don't know, for about 20 years or so. He's an entertainment entrepreneur and a retired Air Force fighter pilot. He owns and operates Al McCree Entertainment, Musical Concepts Incorporated, and the Comedy with Class Network. He's a consultant, a concert promoter, and for 10 years was the artist manager for Jeannie Robertson, a friend of both of ours, an award-winning humorist and professional speaker who unfortunately passed away too early a couple of years ago. As a professional speaker, Al conducts programs on topics such as leadership, sales, customer service, and professional development for corporations and associations throughout the U.S. A native of Orlando, Florida, Al graduated from the Air Force Academy in 1969. He was assigned to Vietnam, where he flew 196 combat missions and earned a Distinguished Flying Cross and several air medals. He retired from the Air Force in 1989 as a lieutenant colonel and command pilot. He lives with Peg, his spouse of more than 50 years. We're in that club together in Brentwood, Tennessee. They have two adult children and two grandchildren. Al, welcome to The Uncomfortable Truth, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you very much. I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. I want to start out by asking you this. You've worked with music executives and entertainment people. You've worked, obviously, with military officers, and you work with business leaders. Are those three kinds of people more alike or unalike?
I mean, I think everybody has some similarities and everybody has some differences. The one thing I did observe when I got into the professional speaking business is the bigger the organization, the more like the government they become. It was interesting to me when I worked with, at the time, Bell South, you know, I started working on this. And this is like the military, it's like government. And so in the bureaucracy and whatever. So in that regard, senior executives are often more concerned about turf than they are about profits and efficiency. Whereas small business people are obviously, or to me at least, more interested in profitability than they are about turf. And in the military, a lot of it was about turf, and so it was really, really interesting for me to observe that. I don't do much professional speaking anymore, but that's probably the only insight I can give you between the three groups.
Well, the military, of course, has a strict hierarchical component to it. Some businesses do and some businesses don't. I'm Catholic and the Catholic Church reminds me of a hierarchical kind of structure. It's interesting. You know, I love the combination of skills and background you bring to people. There's an old phrase that music soothes the savage beast, I think is the way it goes.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, I've watched people who work in silence. I've watched people who work with music constantly on. I listen to Sinatra a lot on Sirius. And when my grandchildren are in the car, they say, would you change, the damn channel? So have you found that music has an influence on productivity or on interactions or sociability or socialization and so forth?
I think as far as working is concerned, for me particularly, it distracts me. I mean, I love music. And so when I work, I typically don't have it on because it's just, I find myself singing the song and not paying attention to what I'm doing. But I think in retail, for example, music in the background certainly helps the buying situation. When we promote concerts, we put on music before when people are coming in and going out. And it certainly stimulates the audience to do that. In the general environment, I'm not sure it helps that much in the general working environment. Again, I think it can be very distracting. Obviously, the type of music makes a difference, whether it's classical or whether it's more contemporary. But there's a lot of things that can change your state of mind, and music is one. Laughter is another. I have literally pulled off to the side of the road when I heard a song that affected me that much just to listen to it. So, it depends on the circumstances. If I'm in retail, I want it on in the background. Personally, when I work in my office, I don't want it on at all.
I watch people with these earbuds in their ears at the gym, driving, walking down the street. But also when they're in a business environment, you know, and they're stocking shelves, might not be the cashier, but they're working on inventory or something. I've always wondered about this, whether it's distracting or it helps people get through the day. I guess it depends on the individual.
Right. I mean, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, the time I put classical music on in the back when I have to sit down and pay bills. Somehow that helps me get through that. I'm thinking that when you faced the challenges of flying these sophisticated aircraft in the military, you know, along with learning how to bail out and, you know, land in adverse consequences and some bad weather and so forth, when you go through that, you're not very fearful when you have to walk on stage and face an audience. Would that be true?
That's true. I mean, flying and being on stage is a lot about confidence, as is many things. You know, you have to be confident. When I was an instructor pilot, you could almost watch the students, and when they became confident, they were ready to solo. If they were not confident, they were not ready to solo. And certainly that's true when you go on stage as a performer. I mean, the best performers are supremely confident. They know exactly, they know they can get the audience. Jeannie Robertson, for example, she just knew she could get the audience. It may take her 5 or 10 minutes to get it, but she would just get it. It is about confidence. And there's a kind of a fine line between confidence and ego. But and I'm not sure how you want to define that, but certainly that's true. I was always been a supremely confident guy going way back. And so being a fighter pilot, being a pilot, being a professional speaker, and now being an entrepreneur, I mean, we have to be confident in our business. We have to know that we're going to succeed in this particular project.
Well, I think confidence is the honest to God belief you can help people. And arrogance is the honest to God belief that you have nothing left to learn yourself. You know,
that's a good definition.
And I've always felt that smugness is arrogance without the talent. You know, my father was in the first paratroop regiment ever formed, and he jumped into the jungles of New Guinea into Japanese guns. And he didn't talk about the war much, but he said, you know, you just assume it's not going to be you. And he did what he was called upon to do. But I tell people who my coach to speak and to walk into buyer's offices, nobody's shooting at you, you know?
Right.
So stop worrying so much. And one of the things that Jeannie Robertson did that I thought was hilarious was that, as you know, she was in these beauty contests when she was younger, but she had no talent really by her own admission. and she got through the talent part of the show by twirling an imaginary baton. And she was so realistic at twirling this imaginary baton that near the end of her act, she set it on fire. Of course, she pretended to set it on fire, but she lit it with a presumed. And she pretended to lose control of it and raced over because it was coming down in her act over the judges. And the judges actually ducked. Now, I think that's just brilliant. And I think we can all do things that overcome shortcomings that way.
Absolutely.
In the music business, is it as cutthroat as it seems at times? And is it as cutthroat or more so than the business world? You know, I just saw Billy Joel in concert at Madison Square Garden, and he sings this famous song where they had to cut his song to 3:05 and they wouldn't play it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's very competitive. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's very interesting. You may have read this book called Blue Ocean Strategy.
Yeah.
And, it's really not any different than other businesses. The most successful acts exploit that blue ocean. When Garth Brooks came along, for example, country artists did not do concerts like rock concerts. They just didn't do it. And like Beyonce, now that she's got this country music album coming out, is primarily an urban artist. By her moving into the country space, that's a blue ocean because there aren't many African Americans who are in that space. So we created this album, this record company called Altissimo. We did the music of the military bands, orchestras, and ensembles. There was virtually no competition. There was some British labels that were doing it, but nobody had done it with American bands in the United States. And I didn't even know I had a blue ocean company until my daughter mailed me this book, and I started reading it. I said, I've got one. So then I've always entrepreneurially been looking for blue ocean opportunities. Jeannie Robertson was a storyteller. whereas most comedians are stand-up comics, with the exception of Bob Newhart and the comedian formerly known as Bill Cosby, there really are no storytellers out there. Right now, we're working with an act called Sean of the South, Sean Dietrich, phenomenal author, plays five different instruments. There's really nobody out there like him. So if you can find, and when you look at the, you know, some very successful acts, usually they figure out a way to be different than everybody else. But the competition in the music business is brutal. I mean, it is absolutely brutal. For one thing, it's, you know, anybody can put out an album on iTunes, spend the money, and the big major record labels, they're not blue ocean companies, they're red ocean companies. They're fighting for market share like everybody else. So it's in any business where there's a lot of competition, the music business is no different. We got great people. We got jerks. We have mostly honest people of integrity. We got a few bad actors. How's that different from any other business?
I've always maintained that there's a certain amount of luck you need. You know, I find that the harder I work, the luckier I get, you know, and Branch Rickey said, luck is the residue of design. I mean, we've all heard these quotes. But my son went into acting for a while when he got out of school. And to me, it was astounding how unfair it was for anyone in acting, in that there was timing involved. There was who you know involved. There were casting people having a good or a bad day. It didn't rely solely on your talent by any means. And what I try to do with consultants and coaches, whom I coach, is to convince them that there's far less luck needed here if you present yourself in a certain way and you use certain processes to get referrals and to close business and so on. So as you moved in between from to the arts, music and entertainment, and into business, you know, leadership and performance and so on, what did you find about talent versus luck? Can you get farther in business with less luck?
No, you need more. You know, you need. There's a great song by Fogelberg called "Run for the Roses," and the one of the greatest lines in there says, "It's breeding and training and something unknown that drives you and carries you home." And I think that's right. I mean, you have to have a, you know, in or, whatever your goal is, whatever your chosen profession is, there has to be a certain amount of genetics. I mean, you have to have the right parents. And then you have to have training. You have to be good at what you do, but then it's always something unknown. And it's who knows what that is. But if you don't have those three things, it doesn't work. So when we're working with acts, you know, we want to look at those things. I will say that in the entertainment business, the real difference is media. I mean, we live in the Nashville area, and you can go downtown to Nashville and go through the honky-tonks and hear some of the finest musicians in the world playing for tips. And the only difference between them and the artists who break out is really media. You know, when people come to us and want to work with us, we say, what's your mailing list? You know, what are your social media numbers? Because the Kardashians have proven you do not have to have talent to be famous, but you have to have media. And so, I've always admired you. You've got many forms of media. You have your blog, you have your podcast. I love your monthly, particularly your monthly blog, but also your weekly blog as well. You know, but that's, you created your own media. And in the space we're in right now, everybody has the option to do that. So this guy, Sean of the South, he's got his own media. So, I mean, that's really the key in the entertainment space. If you can't figure out a way to be in the media, you're not going to be successful. I don't care how talented you are. So is that luck? I don't know. I mean, most artists will have some kind of a media strategy.
Well, let me ask you about a comment you made earlier there about having the right parents, I think you said. Yeah. Now, a lot of people who've been very successful have had horrible home lives. They've had bad parents or no parents. Yet they've still managed to be successful. And there are some people who came from, you know, wonderfully intact homes and parents who haven't been very successful. So why do you make such a direct connection? Is that a DNA or thing that you're talking about?
What I mean is genetics. For example, I think you took the Johnson O'Connor test. I know I took the Johnson O'Connor test. And it rated me extremely high in musical ability. Pardon me. Extremely high, like a symphony orchestra kind of guy. But my manual dexterity was very, very poor. So it doesn't really matter whether I came from a bad background or a good background. My genetics said, okay, you have this tremendous musical ability, but you have very poor manual dexterity. And I was always frustrated when I would go into the studio and try to play it. I could imagine it, but I couldn't play it. So owning a record company where I didn't have to play it was the right source for me. So when I said parents, really, what I really meant is genetics.
One of the reasons I went to Johnson O'Connor is I wanted to find out what instrument I could play. I always admire people who could play the piano so wonderfully. And basically, they told me I shouldn't even play the radio. I failed on all their tests, but they told me that I had a vocabulary that was probably four times the size of their average, and that I was in the top 2% in both inductive and deductive problem solving, which they said never happens.
Right.
So what should I do here? They said, why don't you become a consultant? And of course, I already was one, so that worked out fairly well.
Well, in my case, I had, you know, they told me you should probably be happiest in a small business, probably your own. When I took it, I was in the Air Force. You know, I wasn't particularly happy. Although I had a successful career, I wasn't particularly happy in the Air Force. Well, first of all, it wasn't small and it wasn't my own. So I left the Air Force and started my own business, and I've never been happier. But that's, to me, that's the value of those kinds of tests.
Well, you were in a single seat fighter plane.
That's true.
Your own business right there.
That's true. That's true.
You know, it seems like we're all drowning in awards. There are all kinds of music awards and acting awards, celebrity awards, on and on they go. And I mean, I've never known, how is somebody a best actor? Who judges whether this great actor is better than that great actor in this particular role? Because they're playing different roles to begin with and they're competing. And business has a lot of awards as well.
Right.
And you have Man of the Year and Woman of the Year and whatever it is. So to what extent do you find that in the arts or in business, people are motivated by awards as opposed to just being motivated by the recognition from peers and their fulfillment of doing what they like to do?
Well, going back to my previous comment, in the entertainment space, awards are media. You know, so the most important thing about we had albums chart on the Billboard Top 10, for example, of the classical music charts. So we want to be sure and tell people about it because it's all about media. You had the Grammys, and then you had the Country Music Awards, and then Dick Clark created the Academy of Country Music Awards because everybody in the industry wants more media. And if you can be, the biggest thing is to be nominated, not necessarily to win. So if you can be nominated, you can tell everybody, look who got nominated, because as you know, if you have a critically acclaimed movie, the critics will say it's good for you. So it's all about, for in the entertainment space, it's all about media, and perhaps it's all about media in the business world. I don't know, but for certainly for in the entertainment space. I mean, you want to be nominated for awards and get the award so people will tell everybody about it. And of course, if there's a national TV show, that's even better.
So in your mind, what's the most important thing about being successful in the entertainment business?
Well, for me, it's about helping other people. I mean, we are successful when we're able to, like we took Jeannie Robertson, for example. She was a convention speaker. And I said, I think you can sell tickets to the general public, something she'd never really done before. And I was very, very proud of the fact that we were able to take her from convention speaker to national touring act. Who again, and when they were doing the podcast during COVID, her podcasts were, you know, in the top 10 almost every week. I remember very well sitting in the Opry House in Dallas, sitting on the top third balcony, just completely filled. And she was just on stage and everybody was laughing their rear off. And I said, okay, this is what God intended me to do, was be able to put these acts on stage and have everybody enjoy themselves. And so for me, it's about helping other people. And I think most entertainers, they sort of understand that they're helping people get through life. You know, they're connecting at an emotional level. I mean, I heard Larry Gatlin say that one time. You know, it's about letting people forget about their troubles for 3 hours. And there's many songs that do this. Tim McGraw has a great song, which he did called Live Like You Were Dying. And so it is that platform that allows entertainers to help people. And I think the ones that are best in their craft do that. They're obviously exceptions, but I mean, I think that's probably true of all of business, right? When you can help somebody, when you can mentor somebody, when you can do for the greater good, I think you're going to be successful. I mean, I don't know what your motivations are, but you've certainly helped me and probably thousands of other people.
So you just answered my next question, obviously, which was going to be, what do you think the most important asset is for a business leader? And I guess it would be the same thing, helping other people, making a contribution, right?
I absolutely agree.
And what do you think the most important thing was about being a fighter pilot?
Well, the military has a mission, and it's a tough mission, and it's kind of a brutal mission. I remember within the first week I was at the academy, I was in a big auditorium with a bunch of people, and one of the cadets, very, very new, went up, stopped and asked a panelist that we were seeing, says, you know, do you ever have any remorse about the fact that your job is, you're going to kill people? And the guy on the stage said, listen, you got to understand that your job in the military, in the Air Force, is to drop bombs and kill people. And if you cannot accept that, then you need another profession. So while it's a very stark reminder of what's involved, I think the most important thing in the military is you have to understand what your mission is. If you don't understand what your mission is, you need to find another profession. And it's a tough mission, but that's what it is.
You know, to extrapolate what you just pointed out, I think very, very articulately, is that in business, if you really want to be successful, you have to face the fact that at times you'll make some very difficult and unpopular decisions.
Absolutely.
I watch veterinarians and I watch doctors and I watch, people who are in the helping professions. And sometimes you have to do things that are just horrible, but you have to do that because that's the way you get really excellent at helping other people. And it comes with the turf. So I think you're exactly right about that. What would your advice be, given your varied experience here? I can make a case fighting the enemy, but also fighting sort of intransigent leaders and so forth. What would be your advice to somebody on how to best help people and change their behavior so that they can be more effective?
First of all, I think you have to know who you are. I just had my director of operations, Deja Sexton, go through Johnson O'Connor so we could better understand what her gifts were. So I think, first of all, when I mentor people or talk to people, when an entertainer comes to me, you have to be who you are. Like comedy is a good example. If somebody in their normal life uses a lot of profanity, which I find distasteful, but if that's who they are, that's who they got to be on stage. You can't create a persona unless you're going to go full on actor, unless you're going to be Larry the Cable Guy and create a clown like character that's fine. You've got to buy that character. Otherwise, you got to be who you are. So when I would say the most successful thing is be who you are and then understand that, what is it? Fripp says style is being yourself on purpose. So, I think that's the key. Be who you are and then work on those areas where you can improve. And some people are not entrepreneurial. They're just not. They're much happier working for somebody else. My daughter is an example. She's a senior vice president with Bridgestone. And she's never really had the entrepreneurial bug, but she's very happy in that and very successful in that senior corporate role. My son, on the other hand, much happier being an entrepreneur. He's must have been fired from 14 different jobs because he really can't work for anybody else. He's got to work for himself. And so I said, okay, be yourself, figure out what it is that you want to do and then be yourself and do it. And so I guess that would be my advice for success. Figure out who you are. And then be that on purpose.
Of course, you're talking to somebody who's been fired, so it didn't turn out so bad. a lot of people talk about authenticity, and they sort of bastardize the term because they're not very authentic, You can't talk to me about taking control of my life when you're 50 pounds overweight and you have a drinking problem and you're in your third marriage, Right. You don't exactly have a right to talk to me about authenticity or taking control. But I think you're right. It's important not to try to be someone else, but it's important to see in other people's behaviors what works and what you can adapt for yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me just say for our listeners here that Johnson O'Connor is not somebody paying either Al or paying me.
Absolutely not.
But we both knew that we had gone through this in the past, and it's a wonderful, wonderful, valid set of testing that takes into account musical ability and memory and manual dexterity and all kinds of things. And they give you a very a thorough battery of tests, and they give you very, very helpful feedback. And so you can Google it if you want to find out where they are. But we're not trying to sell it. But I think it's been, and obviously Al does too, a very important part of my own development.
There's another resource. I used two resources when I decided to get out of the Air Force Online business. It's a book by Bowles called What Color Is Your Parachute? Yeah. And which is a really, really good thing to do. And then I actually developed a speech called Celebrating Your Natural Gifts, which I came up with my own set of five questions which people should go through in determining what their gifts are. I mean, one of the ones was, what are you doing when you forget about time? When you're so engrossed in what you're doing that you forget about time and you forget to eat, you're probably, whatever you're doing then is probably very close to a natural gift. So Johnson O'Connor is great, but if you don't want to do it, then What Color Is Your Parachute, I would recommend.
Yeah, that book must have gone through, I don't know, 12, 16 editions.
Absolutely.
I watch it every year. You know, I ask people who am I coach, especially executives, who do you want to be next year? Yeah. And inevitably, they tell me what they want to be doing. And I say to them, that's not what I asked you. Who do you want to be? And that's a very existential kind of question that I think people have to ask themselves, because otherwise you wind up on a plateau and you never grow. So speaking about the book you came up with and so forth, why don't you let us know how people can reach you and make use of your resources? What's the best way to do that?
Sure. AlMcCree.com. Very simple. AlMcCree.com is the website. You can email me at al@almcree.com. A friend of mine who you know, Janice Stanfield, she has a statement that says, you're nobody till you're somebody.com. And so, by the way, you said it, I think it was you who said it. It might have been somebody else that said, you know, rather than being proud of your children, do something that will make your children proud of you. Was that your statement?
Well, I don't know, but I'll take credit for it. Who the hell cares?
Okay. But I thought that was a real turning point for me, you know, and, you know, I am very proud of my children, obviously, but I want to try to do things that will make my children proud of me. And so it was just kind of one of those things. It might have been Seth Godin, who I, you know, read his stuff as well. I just can't remember.
Well, it might have been Seth. I don't think I said that, but what I have said is that you can never make your children poor. Yes. And I grew up poor, and it helped me tremendously. It created a hunger. I got fired early in life. And when you get fired, you either get distraught or you get angry. And I got really angry and I decided I would never work for a moron again. So you can't make your children poor. So then what can you do? You know, my son would say, hey, look, Dad, I know you went to school barefoot in the snow and you rode the double with charcoal. And, you know, it was 3 miles. I said, yes. And it was uphill both ways. Shut up. So, but what you can do with your kids is instill values. And you have to give your kids values that will help them through life, no matter what kind of economic strata they're in, no matter what kinds of issues they face. If they have the right values, they'll be okay. If you don't instill them with the right values and manifest them yourself, I think they're going to have problems.
I think you're right. That's true. I do want to say thank you to you for all you've written over the years. I remember when I first got into the speaking business, I think you might have even changed the title, but your book, Million Dollar Speaking, I have referred that to many, many people who wanted to get into the speaking business. And it really, really helped me as a struggling. I mean, I knew how to speak. What I didn't know how to do is how to sell it. And so by reading your book and others, you know, I was able to sell it. So thank you very much for doing that over the years.
Well, I appreciate that. People ask me how I can write so many books, and I tell them that I go for volume and not accuracy. And about 10% of them say, really? How does that work? So, Al, thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. I knew it would be great, and it has been. I greatly appreciate your honesty and your candor, and again, your service to this country. And you listening today, if you want to learn more about Al, he's given you how to contact him, almcree.com. He does rated.com, so go see him. Al, thank you. Have a good day.
Alan, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
You've been listening to The Uncomfortable Truth with Alan Weiss. For free access to Alan's newsletters, audio and video resources, and for information about his global events and coaching communities, please visit alanweiss.com. Thanks for listening. Keep the faith.